Hi, welcome to Women Living Passionately, honest conversations with amazing women who are living their passion and purpose and making a huge difference in the world. I'm your host, Natalie Matashenko, and I help soulful, smart, spiritual go-getters figure out what they were put on this earth to do and start doing it. Today, I have the extreme honor and pleasure to introduce to you Arielle Ford. Arielle probably doesn't need an introduction, but I will do it anyway. She is a love and relationship expert and a leading personality in the personal growth and contemporary spirituality movement. For the past 25 years, Arielle has been living, teaching, and promoting consciousness through all forms of media. She's a speaker, a producer, and the host of the Evolving Wisdom Art of Love series, as well as author of 11 books, including the international bestseller, The Soulmate Secret, Manifest the Love of Your Life with the Laws of Attraction. She's also the author, founder of the world's first transformational coloring book, Inspirations Love by Design, Coloring the Divine Path to Manifest Your Soulmate and Turn Your Soulmate into, Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate. And among her other many books is the book that literally turned my 20-some-year marriage around. Ah, Wabi Sabi, I always get, it's like a tongue twister. Wabi Sabi Love. I love that book. So welcome, Arielle.
Thank you
for being here.
I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So I know you've been doing this for so long, and this is, you know, beyond your calling. But if you could share just a little bit of how you came to be doing what you're doing, like how you found this as your calling.
Yeah, it wasn't on my to-do list. Basically, what happened was I was a first-time bride at the age of 44. And that whole story is in The Soulmate Secret, how I manifested my soulmate. But what happened after I got married was I had this very shocking discovery, and that was that I came into this marriage with zero partnership skills. I was clueless as to how to make this work. Now, I knew I'd found my soulmate, and I knew that we were meant to be together, but I just was blowing it left and right in terms of, you know, partnership. So I decided to commit to becoming a student of love and to figuring it out. And that was, you know, 20 years ago. And during the course of this time, I was very fortunate to have this series called the Art of Love series, where I've interviewed the world's leading marriage and relationship and love experts. I have over 200 hours of interviews. So I was able to absorb the best of the best of the best.
Yes.
And all of that information is now in my book, Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate. So that's really the short version. It came out of pure necessity, because just finding your soulmate, what I discovered, is the super easy part. Learning how to live with them and continue to love them, that's not so easy.
Amen to that, sister. That is so
true.
I actually met my husband when I was 22. We were very young. And, you know, we've been together almost 25 years now. And
wow.
Yeah, I do feel he's my soulmate. And, you know, as you say in your book, what makes one a soulmate is that they're there to help you grow into your full self-expression, and you are there to do that for them.
Yeah.
And as we all know, growth is not always easy. In fact, it usually isn't. And there's nothing like an intimate relationship to expose everything. So yes, your work has been amazing. So as you know, as we're in the new year and people have just set their resolutions and thinking about the things they want in 2018, you know, I know that for many people watching and listening, improving their relationships and especially their marriage or their partnership, you know, is top on the list.
Natalie, one of the things I want to tell you is that that January is the month of the year when the most amount of divorces get filed.
Really?
So the timing couldn't be better. You know, people usually power through the holidays and then start thinking about divorce in January. And my belief is that 90% of the people that are together, even if they're having a miserable time, are meant to be together and can work it out if they're willing to make some baby steps and take personal responsibility for what's happening. I really believe that if you once believed that somebody was your soulmate, chances are they still are. It's just years of gunk have, you know, glommed onto you, and there's unexpressed anger and frustration or disappointment that can be remedied, but it requires a little attention.
No, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for saying that. I didn't know that about January, but of course it makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
Survive the holidays, you're looking at your future and thinking, oh my God, I cannot stand another day with this person.
Right, right.
Yeah, I love what you say. I also believe that, you know, gosh, at this point, it was probably about 15 years ago, the low point of my marriage after, you know, our oldest came along and we weren't sleeping and all kinds of things going on. And I remember in couples therapy, we were with this wonderful older woman. She was in her 70s. She was actually now in her third marriage, but, you know, like a 20-year marriage. And she said, and, you know, I remember I wanted out. I wanted out of this marriage. I just could not see the silver lining. And she said, you know what? You're still going to have all your crap to deal with because you attracted him for a reason, and you can end this marriage, but you're still going to have to deal with yourself, and he's going to have to deal with himself. So you might as well do this work with the father of your children.
Right.
One
of the things that most people don't know is everybody knows that 50% of first marriages end in divorce. But what they don't know is that 62% of second marriages and 73% of third marriages end in divorce. And the reason is not the other person, it's you. You're the consistent factor in all three of the marriages. So your therapist was brilliant to share that with you. Because even if you go through couples therapy and at the end you decide, okay, we're done, you know, like maybe we had the kids, maybe we've grown in different directions, A, it doesn't mean that they were not your soulmate. It just means that that relationship had an expiration date. And that's okay, too, if you made the effort to see what's there and what's salvageable.
Right. No, absolutely. And learn and grow as you can from it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she definitely said, she said, look, I'm happy with my husband, my third husband now of 20 years. And it took us about a decade to get there. She said, and quite frankly, I could have saved my daughter the pain of two divorces had I done work the first time around. So like, all right, I got the message. Your message, you know, and as I was sharing with you before we started taping, your book, can I say it?
Wabi Sabi Love.
Love is the one that I have, you know, particular fondness for, because I know many people watching or listening, you know, I wasn't raised with great role models in terms of relationship. I mean, my parents are still married, you know, 50 years, but, you know, without getting into the details of their relationship, let's just say, you know, what I saw was a model of, you know, two strong people fighting it out for what they thought was right and what they wanted. And of course that was the model I entered my marriage, you know, with. And reading your book was such a revelation and eye opener in terms of, wait a minute, like, this is the person I chose. He's not perfect. So what are we going to do with these imperfections? You know, how am I going to embrace him? How am I going to honor him? How am I going to learn to love this and really get into his world and like make his happiness and his success as and his dreams as important as my own? You know, not in a subservient, I'm giving up on myself way. That's like impossible. I come from a pure matriarchy, but literally just making it as important.
Right.
So,
right, well, let's define wabi-sabi for your friends out there who have no clue what we're talking about. So wabi-sabi is an ancient Japanese aesthetic that seeks to honor and elevate all things old, worn, imperfect, and impermanent. It seeks to find beauty and perfection in imperfection. So let's imagine this was a very rare Ming vase, and it had a long, crooked crack down the middle of it. The Japanese would shine a spotlight on the crack, and they would put it on a pedestal in a prominent position in the museum. So with Wabi Sabi Love, we're looking to find the beauty and perfection in both ourselves and everybody else, because the truth is, perfection doesn't exist. You know, yet we're seeking perfection all the time. We want perfect kids and a perfect house and a perfect mate. And so we're constantly left with being upset and frustrated and disappointed because we seek the impossible. And what would be really useful is if we could change the definition of the word perfection to pure fiction, okay, and give up on that. And then learn to have fun with imperfection. And let me just give you one really fun example of that. So when I got married, one of the things that used to drive me crazy about my husband was the way he would squeeze the toothpaste tube. I would walk into the bathroom and it would be mangled from the middle. He would squeeze from the middle. And I'm one of these people, I like to roll things up from the bottom, you know, take the tube and then you roll it up and it's all neat and orderly. And I would explain to him, honey, this is the proper way to get toothpaste out of it, you know, get it out. And of course he would laugh at me and ignore me and never change. And so after months of noticing that every time I saw my mangled tube of toothpaste, I would have negative thoughts about him, I thought, well, there's got to be a wabi-sabi solution to this because I don't want to spend my whole life having these negative thoughts. And even though it seems like a trivial thing, the truth was I was still having a physical reaction. Mm. And I thought, well, maybe I'll get two tubes of toothpaste, you know, yours and mine. But the truth is I would still see it and have the thoughts. So one day I went and I got the toothpaste and I put it in the palm of my hand and I had a conversation with it. And I said to it, what's good about you? There's got to be something good about you. And after a few minutes, the toothpaste talked back to me. And I got this aha moment, which was like, oh my God, I have a husband who brushes his teeth. Right? And I saw, oh my God, we're going to grow old together and he's still going to have his teeth. And from that day on, every time I'd see my mangled tube of toothpaste, I would be happy because now it meant, oh, Brian brushed his teeth again. He cares about his dental hygiene. So in Wabi Sabi Love, we have to notice, did he change? No, he didn't change at all. What changed was my story, my perception of his behavior, because that's all it was. I had been taught that the proper way to get the toothpaste out was to squeeze and roll. He had been taught it doesn't matter as long as you brush your teeth. Who's right? We're both right. I like to live in a both and world. The world is both the way you say it is and the way I say it is. Now, this may seem like a trivial thing, but if you have 20 of these trivial things in your life, they add up to a lot of annoyances.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just a fun way to use Wabi Sabi. And I can, given how much time we have, I can tell you lots more stories. The one thing I do want to tell your listeners is that there are three places where you can't Wabi Sabi love your way out of them. One is bad behavior, abuse, or addiction.
Yeah.
If you are experiencing any of those in your relationship, don't listen to anything I have to say. Get a professional counselor, okay? Abuse, addiction, or bad behavior, no Wabi Sabi. Every other annoying thing they do, I promise you there's a Wabi Sabi solution. And it's not about compromise. I don't believe in compromise. I believe in creative solutions and personal responsibility. I want to tell you another story right here that will illustrate this so perfectly. And it's a story of my friends Jerry and Diane. And Jerry is 30 years older than Diane, and they've now been married like 25 years. And when they got married, Diane discovered that Jerry has an addiction. is a psychiatrist, but he's addicted to poppy seed bagels. And every morning he gets up long before Diane does, and he goes into the kitchen and he slices a poppy seed bagel, which sends hundreds of little black seeds all over her white tile floor. And then he toasts his bagel and he puts on the cream cheese, and then he walks around the kitchen eating his bagel, dropping even more black seeds, right? A mess. Every day he does this. Now, an hour later, Diane gets up, and every morning's the same for her. She wets a paper towel, she gets on her hands and knees, and she wipes up all the little black seeds, because as we know, you cannot sweep up seeds. Right. It just scatters.
Especially poppy seeds are tiny.
Right? They're so tiny. So one morning, Diane's on her hands and knees wiping up the seeds, and she's in a bad mood. She's cranky and angry and grumpy. And as she's wiping up the seeds, she has this thought. And the thought was, I wonder what would have to happen so I would never have to do this again. And that was followed by the thought, oh, that would mean Jerry's no longer with me. And she got off the floor and ran into the next room to give him a hug.
Aww.
And from that day forward, every morning as she wipes up the little black seeds, her heart fills with love because the seeds mean she has another day to spend with Jerry. That is wabi-sabi love. And I want you to know that Jerry is now 92 years old. He is 100% blind and he's still eating poppy seed bagels every morning.
Yeah. No, thank you. That is a beautiful, beautiful story. And just such a reminder, right? Because we all want our soulmate. We all want these beautiful, connected, nourishing relationships. And we put so much energy into attracting them, as you well know. And then we get them, right?
And we want to kill them.
Right. And then we want to kill them because, you know,
The thing you need to remember is that that's normal. Okay, people have these breakdowns, and then they think something's wrong, and the grass is greener somewhere else, and they've got to dump them. And the truth is, there's a guy named what's his name? He's at the University of Washington. He's like the world's leading marriage. Yes, Dr. John Gottman is the world's leading marriage researcher. And what he has discovered is that every single couple, not just a few, all of us, every couple has a minimum of 9 irreconcilable differences. These are things on which you are never, ever, ever, ever going to agree. So it could be one of you's always on time, the other one's always late. One likes it hot, one likes it cold. One wants sex every day, one wants sex once a month. You know, one's a spender, one's a saver. That almost everybody's got that.
Right.
That's not going to change. But you can come up with creative solutions for all of it. You can learn to love and respect your partner in spite of the fact that you're 180 degrees on something. And that's really the purpose of soulmate love. Harville Hendricks, who I worship and adore and admire, Oprah calls the marriage whisperer. Mm-hmm. He says the true purpose of taking sacred vows and being married is so that you have the safe container for all your childhood wounds to appear in, so you become each other's healer. So all this stuff that comes up, it's normal.
Yes.
It's not a good enough reason to leave. It is normal. But what you need to do is come up with creative solutions, learn good communication skills, all of which are learnable, and I have scripts for them in my book, Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate, so you don't have to make it up.
Right.
You know, and then take personal responsibility.
Right, absolutely, because as that therapist of mine said years ago, wherever you go, there you are.
And right.
Childhood trauma and childhood stuff still needs to be brought to the light and healed.
Yeah, I learned this the really hard way. So I grew up as an oldest child, and I'm used to getting my own way, and I'm a terrible listener. And my husband's a youngest child whose greatest need and desire is to be heard and listened to.
Of course.
So, right? And so here he ends up with somebody who, you know, terrible listener, doesn't understand that need for healing, until it finally occurred to me one day, because he was always saying to me, you're not listening to me. And I, of course, that would trigger my defensiveness. And it's like, yes, you just said A, B, and C, because you might know what I said, but you're not listening. Right. And I had to learn how to listen, because I realized if I didn't listen to him, he would find somebody who would. So what does listening look like? Well, it means putting down whatever else I'm doing, turning my body towards him, mm-hmm. you know, looking into his eyes, and then, you know, making sure I'm hearing him. So if he says to me, you know, I'm really disturbed about XYZ, I can just say, oh, I get it. You're not happy about XYZ. Is there more? You know, and learned how to have a dialogue that was meaningful. Now, do I always want to do this? No. There's plenty of times I'm much more interested on the thoughts in my head or the texts on my phone or whatever it was that I was doing when he wanted my attention. But Gottman says that what you're doing when you turn your attention to somebody and you are facing them, you're doing what is called bidding. And if you're not doing your spouse's bidding, then you're on the track to divorce. He actually has figured out how to observe a couple for 15 minutes and predict with 97% accuracy whether or not the marriage will make it.
Right.
And these are all simple, learnable skills. The problem with, you know, you and I and the rest of the world is we didn't know. Nobody taught us, you know, which is why I'm fortunate enough to have a career writing books about this stuff and talking about it, because it works for me. It's working for you. It totally works. You just need to know what you're doing.
Right. And do it, of course.
Right.
You know, what I loved about what you shared as well is, you know, I believe your husband didn't just wind up with somebody who's, you know, wasn't inclined to listen. I mean, I believe this right. in our souls, right? Our souls literally attract the
yes.
people we need, who are going to push against those hurt places so we can heal them and grow through the process.
Well, Harville Hendrick says that we have an unconscious picker, soulmate mm-hmm. picker, that this unconscious part of us picks the right person. And I asked him one day, I said, well, how do you know if you're in the right relationship? And what he said floored me. He said, you know you're in the right relationship when it starts off as a dream come true and then devolves into your worst nightmare.
Wow. Yay, I'm in the right relationship.
Right?
We made it out to the other side. That's why.
Right, and you can. You know, absolutely you can. And isn't it funny how you can work through stuff and things are peachy and then somebody says something or somebody looks at you a particular way and suddenly, bam, you're triggered and you're ready to kill them and you don't know why. So the truth is that it's an ongoing process. Whether you're married 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, you will get triggered for the rest of your life. Now, the difference will be you'll have more skills. It won't last as long. 50% of the time, you can own your stuff right away. Like there are times when Brian will start to say, oh, you're not listening to me. And then he'll laugh and he'll go, oh, yeah, that's my issue. And there are other times where he's off and running and I have to say, you know what, you're right, I'm really sorry, I'm gonna put this down, let me hear you now. And you know, saying yes, you're right, I'm sorry, maybe the four biggest life-saving words you could ever learn. You know, just owning it will stop a fight pretty quickly. You know, it's when you start to get defensive, you know, because you get triggered, that you get into the ping pong of no, you know.
God, this stuff should be taught in school, right?
Yes. Yes,
it
should.
I've learned so much useless stuff. It's, you know, now that my oldest are teenagers and they're learning all the super high level math and super high level, a lot of things. And I'm not saying, you know, it's useless, But, you know, depending on the track you choose in life, a lot of it will be stuff you don't even remember. But these relationship skills, you know, how to...
Yeah, and you can use them across the board. It's not just in your intimate relationship. You can use them with everybody. You know, it's like the more I embrace wabi-sabi, both with myself and the world around me, the easier the world gets. Because the truth is, life isn't hard. What's hard are the human beings that you have to interact with. If there weren't any other humans, the rest of it's just, you know, problem solving, you know, and you get to be more generous and more accepting once you realize, you know, like I have a real issue with drama queens. I mean, I don't like having drama queens in my life, and yet I'm related to several, you know. Yeah. And now that I can be more wabi-sabi, it's like, you know what? It's just who they are. What I have control over is I get to limit how much time I stay in their drama-filled world. You know, I like to say that there are certain people that you should only see in homeopathic doses. You know, you don't need to cut them out of your life. You just limit the time so that they don't make you crazy.
Yeah, no, that's absolute self-care. And actually, if I can share a funny little anecdote with you, you know, so I read your book and I started summarizing parts of it to my husband, and especially the part about, you know, just find the humor, you know, find humorous ways to point out the things that bother you, or just find the humor in what's going on. And he literally was like, you know, you see, I don't need to read all these books. I've been telling you that for years. Just laugh at me. And it's true. And I stopped to think about, you know, as I would get all upset about something he was doing, and he would recognize that he does it repeatedly and he can't stop. And he'd just be like, well, just laugh at me. I can't help it, but it's really not a big deal.
Right. And you can name it. Like Brian and I have code names. So when I get really bossy and overbearing, he just calls me Sheila. That's my mother's name. And I adore my mother. She's wonderful. And she can be bossy and overbearing. And, you know, when he gets really patriarchal and gets up on his soapbox, he told me to call him Wayne. That's his dad's name. Now, in the beginning, we used to do it a lot. We don't do it so much anymore because it doesn't happen so much anymore. But it used to take us from on the verge of World War III to laughing our heads off, because he'd go, oh, I see Sheila just arrived. And it's like, oh, yes, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Okay. You know, and you can have fun with it.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it amazing? Because thinking of what Harville Hendrix said, you know, your biggest dream turns into your biggest nightmare. And what you offer is a way to turn it back into
your
dream again. Because it's like we spend our lives fighting over things that really...
Yeah, and stuff you can't change. Like I had this woman in one of my workshops one day, and we were talking about wabi-sabi, and she said to me, well, I have a problem even you can't solve. I said, okay, try me. She said, well, my name's Stephanie, and I've been married to Garth for 16 years, and I'm a real perfectionist, neat-nick, everything has a place, and he's a total slob, and things are chaotic. And she said, honestly, the only thing that keeps our marriage together is that he works out of state 2 weeks of every month. So when he's gone, the house is mine. But when he comes home within hours, it's a mess again. And I thought about it, and I said, well, Stephanie, do you have a dog? And she said, yes. And I said, does your dog shed? And she said, yes. And well, what do you do when the dog sheds? And she said, well, I vacuum up after him. And I said, well, do you love your dog? And she said, yes. And then she got really quiet. And she was like, oh my God, Garth sheds. and she got that just like the dog can't help shedding, Garth can't help that he's a slob. And, you know, a year after this happened, when I was writing Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate, I've tracked her down. It took me a while, but I found her and I called her, and I wanted to find out, was that just a momentary aha moment, or did something really change? And she told me, she said that her marriage has never been better, that it's so good that Garth quit his job and started a home-based business so they could be together 24/7.
Wow.
And yes, he's still a slob.
But, you know, it's like, who cares, right? It's, you're happy.
You know, but she got that, you know, That's who he is, and love him anyway. Dr. Laura's got this great line where she says, you know, somebody's complaining about something, and she'll say to them, well, dear, is that a reason not to love him?
That is a great line.
Isn't that a great line? I mean, really, unless they're doing something horrific, we've just got to be more loving and accepting. And while we're on the subject of love, let me just give you a definition, because so many people don't know what love is. They think love is a feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, how do I know I love you? Oh, I feel it. Yeah, but what about the days you don't feel it? So there is a feeling component to love, but real mature adult love is a behavior. It's a practice. It's a decision. It's a choice. It's an action. That's what real love is. So I may not be feeling any love at all, but I am still going to behave and practice loving you in spite of what I'm feeling. You know, and that's another thing we weren't taught. You know, we think the being in love state, which is really just, you know, what I call the socially acceptable form of insanity. It's just a chemical high that doesn't last. We think that's what love is. You know, you're swooning, you're swept away. You know, no, it's a drug high. And it's great and it's fun, but it's nature's trick just to get us matched up and to procreate. That's why it doesn't last.
Right.
Real love is an action.
Right. Well, and what I love about that too is that it's really a spiritual practice.
Yes.
It's what you're doing for the relationship, but to show up with loving behaviors when you don't feel it. I mean, what could be more of a spiritual practice than that?
And that doesn't mean you're a doormat or a pushover and that you don't have the difficult conversations. But in turn, your mate into your soulmate, I give you the formula on how to have those difficult conversations in a loving, kind, compassionate, effective way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't degenerate into the ping pong.
Right.
That,
yeah.
And, you know, I know we're running out of time, but this conversation is just so fascinating. I do have another question for you. Mm-hmm. Do you see gender differences, you know, in applying this work?
You know, I don't focus on gender at all. It's not a subject I'm interested in. I'm only interested in what works.
Right.
You know, I mean, there are men's brains are wired differently from women. And there's a whole chapter in Turn Your Mate into Your Soulmate called Understanding Men. But here's the basics. Men like and need to win. They can only focus on one question at a time.
Yes.
They want to be your hero. And they can't be happy unless you're happy.
Yeah.
So you need to know that about them. And there are ways to let them know how to make you happy that they can hear. And then there are lots of ways where they tune you out. And probably if they're tuning you out, it's because you have a nasty tone of voice or you're whining, bitching, moaning, complaining, and that doesn't work. As far as the other gender part of it, for me, it's about let's treat all humans with love and kindness and compassion and acceptance, you know, and tell the truth as soon as you know it. And stop blaming and shaming and beating people up. You know, we're all doing the best we can. And the truth is, regardless of if you're male, female, or both, or somewhere in between, we all want the same thing. And that is to be loved and accepted for who we are. All of us, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Yeah. No, thank you. That's very beautiful and very profound. And like I said, I think this stuff should be taught early on. Before we get into relationships, you know, because it's so important. We waste our lives and so much potential for love because we don't have the skills. So thank you for the work that you're doing in the world and teaching people how to do this. So as we wrap up, kind of last question that I like to ask everybody I interview, which is, you know, what advice would you have for your younger self? You know, this could be 10 years ago, 20, 30, you know, whichever one needed to hear it the most. But what would be kind of the golden nugget?
I would just say that everything's going to be okay. And everything is going to exceed your wildest expectations. Like you can't even begin to imagine what's coming down the pike is about the only thing I could say. And the last thing I do want to tell all your people is that I have free chapters to turn your mate into your soulmate at soulmatesecret.com, soulmatesecret.com. So if anybody wants to take a look at that, there's three free chapters there.
Great. Thank you. Yes, I will have those resources on the page where everybody can access this interview. And you beat me to it. I was actually going to ask, you know, many wonderful books, you know, how can people access your work more? Because you do have so much wisdom and so much experience to share.
Well, thank you for doing this series. I'm sure you're helping lots and lots of people. The world has never needed more love than it does right now. And if you can create love for yourself and for your family and for your neighbors, it will have a ripple effect. You know, you don't need to save the world. Start with your own backyard. If you start there, it will ripple out in a tsunami of love.
Oh, that's beautiful. And yes, you are very wise in saying that. And that is so true, right? We think making a huge impact and changing the world means everything out there, while we ignore our own our own home and our own backyard. But that's really where the change starts. So thank you again for being here today, for sharing your wisdom. Thanks to everybody watching or listening, and happy 2018. Bye-bye. Thank you.